NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. Work with salaried loan officers, get pre-approved in an hour, close in as fast as 8 days. 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
This is the Mike Rosen Show.
Adjectives on the typewriter. He moves his words like a prize fighter. Save somebody.
Mike Rosen.
You got to see it all.
On News Radio 850 KOA.
Good afternoon. Let me start with this kind of a opening monologue of sorts. You know, there are the old cliched blonde jokes and other various techniques of taking pot shots at women. This falls under the heading of equal time. Someone was kind enough to send me this via email. Here's a woman fighting back with some personal experiences. He said to me, "I don't know why you wear a bra. You've got nothing to put in it." I said to him, "You wear pants, don't you?" All right. He said to me, "Shall we try swapping positions tonight?" I said to him, "That's a good idea. You stand by the stove and sink while I sit on the sofa and do nothing but fart." He said to me, "What have you been doing with all the grocery money I gave you?" I said to him, "Why don't you turn sideways and look in the mirror?" He said to me, "Why don't women blink during foreplay?" I said to him, "They don't have time." He said to me, "How many men does it take to change a roll of toilet paper?" I said to him, "I don't know. It's never happened." He said to me, "Why is it difficult to find men who are sensitive, caring, and good-looking?" I said to him, "They already have boyfriends." He said to me, "What do you call a woman who knows where her husband is every night?" I said to him, "A widow." Finally, he said to me, "Why are married women heavier than single women?" I said to him, "Single women come home, see what's in the fridge, and go to bed. Married women come home, see what's in bed, and go to the fridge." All right, there you go. So, equal time for women. I haven't really visited this topic, but I've been saving some letters to the editor that have been in the Denver Post. This one has pretty much run its course, and I'm kind of reluctant to bring it up again, but I think that John Andrews and Colorado Christian University and the Western Conservative Summit deserve to have their side of the story better told. And their side of the story is every bit defensible. Some of the letters to the editor in the Post, and, you know, these are letters to the editor. People who are moved to take the time to write a letter to the editor normally do so, not exclusively, because they're energized. And you're more likely to write a letter to the editor, especially an angry one, if you've read something in the paper that you disagree with. Or if there's some issue that you disagree with. If you simply agree with somebody's column, most people aren't going to bother writing a letter to the editor. Now, people who write letters to the editor also include activists. This is their crusade, their mission. And they're not constrained by what they're criticizing actually says. I can't tell you, and I don't have a thin skin, so don't worry about my feelings being hurt. I can't tell you how many times I'll read letters to the editor criticizing a column completely misrepresenting what I said in the column. They set up a straw man. And then they go argue with the straw man. And they're also not constrained by reason or logic, much less the facts. But it's a free country, and more people read the letters section on the opinion page than actually read the column, maybe because it's small doses rather than 650 words or so. Regarding this issue of this very successful Western Conservative Summit, that the Centennial Institute and Colorado Christian University have been hosting for several years. And John Andrews is a longtime old friend of mine, former Senate president in Colorado, good guy, very smart. John had a guest column that he wrote in the Denver Post explaining his organization's position. And as is John's custom, it was carefully worded. It was rational, it was logical, it was honest. That doesn't apply to letters to the editor. So here's one from Felice Sage of Littleton. I recognize the name. She's a repeat letter writer and a flaming left-winger. This one is downright dishonest, though. Here's what she has to say. John Andrews opens his column defending his Western Conservative Conference's banning of specific representation for log cabin Republicans. Wait a second. They haven't been banned. They're invited to attend. They just have been told that they can't have an exhibit, an official exhibit. And the reason is not because they're gay, the log cabin Republicans, but because on this very hot issue right now, and the Supreme Court is about to rule on it, of same-sex marriage, this Christian organization, Colorado Christian University, disagrees with those who are advocates for same-sex marriage. But as individuals, the log cabin Republicans, their members, were invited to attend as individuals. They just weren't given an opportunity to have an exhibit. And at that exhibit, they may well have advocated for same-sex marriage. Since by their reaction, some of the log cabin Republicans have demonstrated that the degree to which they're Republicans is very much subordinate to the degree to which they're advancing their gay agenda. That's another issue. All right, so that's flat out wrong. They weren't banned. Then she identifies the log cabin Republicans as a gay Republican group, and then talks about John Andrews' guest commentary, and she says that it had two paragraphs of analogies that put gays in the most negative possible light. Well, I'll read to you just what John wrote. They were not analogies. They were examples. And it's an important distinction here, because what he was doing was offering examples to demonstrate that one group is not obliged to include people at an event that group is hosting with whom they disagree. They're not obliged to include those people as part of their event as exhibitors. And he used some extreme cases to drive home the point. But this letter writer is pretending that John Andrews, by dint of the examples he gave, is comparing gays to some of the very negative and distasteful other groups or individuals that he cited, which he clearly wasn't. For example, here's what John said. This was his lead to this guest commentary. Did you hear about the Jewish festival selling an exhibit table to Holocaust deniers? Or the Catholic Conference, where opponents, after pitching a fit, were allowed a poster saying the Pope is the Antichrist? Of course not. Well, how about the Planned Parenthood seminar, where pro-lifers insisted on displaying gruesome photos of aborted babies? Or the Log Cabin Republicans gay advocacy group letting Fred Phelps advertise at their convention? Now, you may be familiar with Fred Phelps. He's the leader of the Westboro Baptist Church, and this is a nasty crowd. They're most infamous for their tasteless demonstrations at funeral services for American soldiers who've died in combat. And they go there to strut their stuff and demonstrate and shout and yell and hoot and holler, presumably because they think that God's curse on these soldiers took the form of their being killed in combat because there are states that have same-sex marriage or whatever other things this crowd disapproves of. Now, you're free to disapprove in this country of ours, but the Westboro Baptist Church crowd and Fred Phelps are just simply revolting, which is why John Andrews used that example, a gay advocacy group letting Fred Phelps advertise at their convention. Of course they wouldn't do that. It would be preposterous for them to do that, and they have no obligation to do so. Then he says this, why didn't you hear about any of these incompatible matchups? Because the American way is freedom, fairness, tolerance is a two-way street. The American way is live and let live. Private organizations, whether religious or secular, get to choose their partners and presenters in keeping with the organization's core values. What you've heard about this week, he said, this was 2 weeks ago, is the Log Cabin Republicans laying on a national campaign of shaming and bullying against Colorado Christian University for asserting that same First Amendment protection, the right to choose our partners and presenters in an upcoming conference in keeping with our own core values. Since 2010, he noted, Colorado Christian University is hosting the Western Conservative Summit. We're expecting 4,000 delegates, 50 speakers, 100 exhibitors this year, June 26th through the 28th. But the summit is not about parties. It's a freedom rally with a Christian biblical worldview. And it is not, I should note, an event hosted by the Colorado Republican Party. It is not a Republican event. Now, it'll be attended by many Republicans, and the Colorado Republican Party has an exhibit there. And as a matter of fact, Steve House, who's now the state chair, has invited the Log Cabin Republicans to be part of the Republican Party's exhibit. So they are very much welcome there. But this isn't an event that is presented and hosted in the name of the Republican Party. It's hosted in the name of Colorado Christian University and its think tank, the Centennial Institute, that hosts all kinds of events. John Andrews went on to say, we encourage the Log Cabin Republicans to attend as individuals, refunded the payment, explained that our tentative faith that marriage is one man and one woman is in conflict with their advocacy for same-sex marriage. They're not disinviting them as an exhibitor is because they're gay. It's about this issue of same-sex marriage, which is hot right now. And at this event, hosted by Colorado Christian University, in the past they've hosted Tammy Bruce to speak at the summit, Mark Ferrandino to speak on campus, who are gay. We love everyone gay or straight as Jesus commands us. We just disagree on some issues. Nonetheless, Log Cabin supporters from across the country have been calling CCU haters, bigots, the Taliban, calling on people to boycott the event. These are Log Cabin Republicans. Republicans is part of their identification. This isn't a Republican event. You know, why are they doing this? Where does their Republicanism fit in the context of the coalition of which they're a part as compared to their narrower agenda of only gay issues? They're Republicans because they agree with Republicans and conservatives on far more issues than they disagree. Well, this is kind of revealing the nature of their protest against the event and against Colorado Christian University. I want to finish with this letter from Felice Sage, but I'm checking the clock, so I'll have to do that in the second part coming up. Bear with us.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. American Financing offers the new government-backed down payment for first-time home buyers. Call American Financing at 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
All right. So I gave you the actual wording of John Andrews' response and his guest commentary. And he used these graphic examples to demonstrate why one organization whose fundamental beliefs were 180 degrees out from some of the people that might want to barge in on that organization's hosted event, why it would be preposterous to have them do so. So in this dishonest letter to the editor in the Denver Post by Felice Sage, she's making the claim that Andrews is comparing gays to some of these Holocaust deniers and Fred Phelps anti-gay activists. He is not in any way, shape, or form. And then she finishes up with this. Since Jews certainly do not love Holocaust deniers, nor can gays be expected to love anti-gay hate mongers like Fred Phelps, one can only wonder why Andrews chose a string of such analogies that are not analogies to support his claim that his conference isn't anti-gay and stands for love of everyone. Well, his conference isn't anti-gay. It's a Western Conservative Summit. There are going to be all kinds of important issues addressed there. And as he's indicated, gays have attended and spoken before at the conference. It's this issue of same-sex marriage that is in fundamental opposition to the underlying religious beliefs of Colorado Christian University, the people who started it, and the people who are part of the organization. That's why. They're not opposed to gays per se. It's this issue, as he explained it. And I should note that same-sex marriage is opposed by a significant majority of Americans over the age of 40. When you aggregate American public opinion on same-sex marriage, it is now tilted in favor of that, primarily because of the influence of younger people who are much more comfortable with it and have been conditioned to be more comfortable with it through school and the media and everything else. But it is not an opinion that is eccentric. Most people, most older people, I use 40 since you can document that in the polls when they give the demographics, most people over 40 still oppose it. So what this leads us to is a bigger question. And it's this whole business of intolerance, especially by people on the left. Regardless of the law on same-sex marriage or anything else, people are free to disapprove based on their beliefs, religious or otherwise. It's not a criminal offense in a free society to disapprove. All kinds of people approve or disapprove of all kinds of things. Some militant gays and lesbians have even defamed heterosexuals as breeders. Does that mean we should call out the thought police and have them arrested? Of course not. They're free to disapprove. And I want to give you some examples of things about which people disapprove. How about Islamists, jihadists, fundamentalist Muslims? They disapprove of infidels. That includes Christians and Jews. Well, I happen to disapprove of the behavior of fundamentalist, barbaric Islamist jihadists. Would you deny me that prerogative to disapprove? But in this country, you see, we tolerate Muslims. As a matter of fact, you might even have some great Muslim friends who also disagree with the Islamist barbarians. We tolerate these kinds of things as long as people don't act lawlessly according to our criminal codes, not a Sharia law code. I want to throw that open to your comments when we come back after our bottom of the hour news break.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. Military personnel streamline your VA refinance even if you're over 100% equity. No appraisal needed. Call 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
Okay, so the subject of disapproval, are you not free to decide which things you approve of and which things you disapprove of? I use the examples, since we were talking about gay marriage, of some people who are opposed to it and they disapprove of it. That sentiment, of course, has been eroding in recent years, and more people approve of it overall than disapprove now. That wasn't the case 20 years ago when Barack Obama disapproved of it. It wasn't the case when Hillary Clinton disapproved of it and other people, but they've changed their positions as well, largely because they look across the fence and see that their constituents and the people who are part of their coalition have changed their view on that. But think about all the things that you might disapprove of, or things that you do that other people disapprove of. Suppose you disapprove of premarital sex or sex out of marriage. Suppose someone's been married once or twice and is now 50 or 60 years old and is still involved in sexual activity and doesn't want to get married again. Is that the same as a 15-year-old having sex? But you're free to disapprove of that if you choose. Other people don't disapprove of it. Some people disapprove of drinking alcohol. Some people disapprove of pornography. It doesn't make it illegal. How about people on the left who disapprove of conservatives or disapprove of Christian fundamentalists? How about people on the far left that disapprove of capitalism? People who disapprove of bankers and insurance companies? People on the right that disapprove of labor unions or lavish public employee defined benefit pension plans subsidized by taxpayers? I know a lot of people who disapprove of Federal Reserve monetary policy. I'm among them right now. Trillion-dollar deficits, phony stimulus programs that don't generate economic growth. Some of these things are on issues. Some of these things are on lifestyles. But you're free to disapprove. Now, your disapproval can take the form of silent disapproval. It can take the form of discrimination. And some of that discrimination on the basis of what the courts called protected categories, protected classes, is illegal if it's based on race or color or religion or sex or disability. Some of those things, if it's arbitrary discrimination. But there are other situations where you can discriminate on the basis of age or religion or disability that aren't arbitrary and aren't illegal under any law. I use the example, for instance, of a paralyzed man, since we've got the draft coming up, and incidentally, at the KOA, we will be covering that today at 3 o'clock, the draft. I used the example of a paralyzed man who applies for a job as a Denver Broncos tight end. Now, we have something called the Americans with Disabilities Act that protects people from arbitrary discrimination on the job and in other places based on a disability, but that wouldn't be arbitrary discrimination. It would be rational. So, thoughts on approval and disapproval, give us a call, 713-8585, our telephone number. So, Colorado's gotten a lot of bad press in some quarters because we, along with other states, and it'll be a growing number of states, have legalized marijuana. There was an interesting piece in the Washington Examiner recently about drug abuse in the United States, and I think this will surprise you. Americans have used a variety of drugs at some point in their lives, from cocaine and crack to inhalants. Almost half the country has used marijuana, even before it became legal in several states. And they've got a listing here of the various kinds of substances that people use. Marijuana checks in at 44%, by far the most used drug, with almost half of the U.S. population having at least tried it, and 19.8 million people having used it in the last month. It's been gaining greater acceptance. States are beginning to legalize it, Washington, Colorado, District of Columbia, and, of course, for medical use before that. How about heroin? What percentage of people are heroin users? 1.9%. Surprisingly low. Heroin's cheap, potent, highly addictive. Fatal overdoses have tripled since 2010. Some states have declared public health emergencies. Prescription painkillers are the first step to heroin addiction. When a supply of painkillers runs out or becomes too expensive, addicts sometimes turn to the cheaper heroin. Stimulants. Prescription stimulants, such as Adderall, which is an amphetamine, and Ritalin, which is a methylphenidate, I guess, are used to help treat ADHD. However, they're also used to get high since they produce a euphoric effect. They can be crushed and snorted or mixed with water and injected. More than 11% of 26 to 34-year-olds and 9.4% of 18 to 25-year-olds have used them. Tranquilizers. More than 10% of 18 to 49-year-olds have tried tranquilizers, with 15.4% of 26 to 34-year-olds having used them. Tranquilizers can be barbiturates or sleeping pills or benzodiazepines, which are drugs such as Valium used to calm anxiety, Lunesta, which is a good sleep aid. I've got a prescription for Lunesta. There are times when I'm having trouble sleeping, and I use that. I don't use it excessively. You can get hooked on it if you do, and then you become so dependent on it that you'd have to use it every single day, and then it's not as effective. Then there are non-prescribed painkillers, becoming a major health problem. Unintentional overdose deaths have quadrupled since 1999. The number of prescriptions have soared. About 52 million people and more than 20% of 18 to 34-year-olds said they've taken painkillers such as Vicodin and OxyContin without a prescription. Crack. Use of crack cocaine reached epidemic proportions in the late 80s. Now it's relatively low and falling, according to the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. While the effects of snorted cocaine kick in minutes after ingestion and last for about 20 to 30 minutes, crack is absorbed by the brain in a matter of seconds, producing an intense addictive euphoria for only a few minutes. Now that's 3.4%. Inhalants, 8%. Nearly 22 million U.S. residents have at least tried an inhalant. They're often used by teens who find them around the house, spray paints, glue, cleaning fluids, markers. They inhale the vapors to get a mind-altering effect. Inhalants often are the first stop for youths who want to try drugs. And then finally, hallucinogens. 15.4% of all U.S. residents say they've tried hallucinogens such as mushrooms, LSD, and PCP. Almost one-fourth of 26 to 34-year-olds say they've tried them. LSD is one of the most potent mood and perception-altering hallucinogenic drugs. DXM, found in cough syrup, is also popular, particularly with teens and young adults. Thought you'd find that interesting. Right back on 850 KOA.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. American Financing offers the new government-backed down payment for first-time home buyers. Call American Financing at 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
It's been said regarding public opinion and what people know, it's not so much what people don't know that gets us in trouble. It's what people think they know that isn't true. And here's a fabulous example, or a terrible example. A random sample of Americans in a Reason Roop poll in May 2013 were asked this simple question. Just a rough guess. What percent profit on each dollar of sales do you think the average company makes after taxes? All right, think about that for a second. If I were to ask you that question, cold, or some pollster did, what percentage on each dollar of sales do you think the average American company makes after taxes? What would you say? Well, according to this poll, the average response was 36% as a percentage of sales. 36 cents out of every dollar of sales is profit. According to a Yahoo Finance database for 212 different industries, in fact, the average profit margin for the most recent quarter was 7.5%. And the median profit margin was 6.5%. There wasn't a single industry out of the 212 that had a profit margin as high as 36%. The public's complete overestimation of how much companies earn in profits as a share of sales explains a lot. If in fact, $36 of every $100 in sales at a company like Walmart or McDonald's or Home Depot or local dry cleaners or restaurant really was profits, then of course these companies can afford to pay an unrealistic living wage of $15 an hour, accept unreasonable demands from labor unions, provide all sorts of generous fringe benefits, including weeks of paid holidays, long paid maternity leaves, gold-plated pension programs. The public that believes in the fantasy world of sky-high 36% profit margins would naturally think companies are just being greedy and stingy when they don't pay higher so-called living wages and have to be forced to do so through minimum wage laws. But of course, it's wildly out of whack. That's because people confuse markup with margin. People know that a department store, for example, that buys a dress at wholesale from a manufacturer for $50 might mark it up to $100, doubling the cost of the dress. Well, if they do the math on that, that's a 50% profit. You buy it for $50 and you sell it for $100, but that's gross margin. It doesn't include all of the other expenses that the department store incurs. It doesn't include payroll expenses. It doesn't include heat, light, and power. It doesn't include advertising. It doesn't include legal expenses. It doesn't include property taxes, and on and on and on. The average across American industries is more like 5 or 6% profits as a percentage of sales. And, of course, an even more important measure is profits as a percentage of assets or equity, return on investment kinds of analyses. So the notion that a company can make this kind of a profit margin, a real profit margin, 30, is preposterous. Because in a competitive market economy, consumers wouldn't allow a company to make that kind of a profit margin. It would be so much easier for other companies to still make generous profits by undercutting the profits of companies that charge excessively high when consumers have other choices. But if you're blessed with economic ignorance on this topic, you can embrace all kinds of public policies that don't make any sense at all. Also, people also think that selling price is determined by cost. Think about this. You start your own company. You just add up all the costs, and then you throw a amount of profit you want to make on top of it, and that's your selling price. No, it's the other way around. In a competitive market economy, it's exactly the opposite. Cost is determined by selling price. You see, the market will determine what you can sell it for if people have competitive choices. So if you want to be selling this product or service, you have to figure out a way of delivering this product at the market clearing price by getting your costs under the price that the consumers will allow you to pay for it. That's the way it works in the real world. But so many people who are misinformed about this, or so many people on the left who are inherent socialists anyway and don't understand market economics, simply want more desirable outcomes. They want people to be paid more. Wouldn't it be nice if people were paid more? Well, sure, for them. However, if everybody were paid more, and if you didn't have competitive choices to shop at a place where people are paid less, then those prices would have to be passed on to you. The market clearing price would be higher because all of the providers would be paying the same amount, except it's even more complicated because now you'd have the alternative of going to foreign suppliers in a global economy. So it's not nearly as easy as people on the left believe it is, or people who are starting with a false premise in order to allow them to be as generous with other people's money as they would like to be. All right, when we come back, we'll find out if SolarCity and stores like that can place a lien on your property for the solar panels that they rented to you. We've got a guest from an organization called Watchdog.org that's investigated this. I think you'll find this to be interesting and might be able to save you some difficulty down the road.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. Work with salaried loan officers, get pre-approved in an hour, close in as fast as 8 days. 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
This is the Mike Rosen Show.
Adjectives on the typewriter. He moves his words like a prize fighter. Save somebody.
Mike Rosen.
You got to see it all.
On News Radio 850 KOA.
How many of you out there have solar panels on your house? Have you contracted with a company called SolarCity? They're one of the biggest in this area, or maybe some other ones. Have you been told that you can save a lot of money over the long run on your utility bills? And, of course, there are so many dollars in federal subsidies associated with this particular element of sustainable energy that what would otherwise be a terrible economic deal can be a good deal for you only because somebody else is subsidizing it. But what's your obligation to SolarCity? If you have paid nothing down, they have some very, very attractive terms for this, and have really entered into a long-term agreement to lease or rent these panels. You don't own them. SolarCity owns them. And the reason why SolarCity wants to own them, A, is to make it easier for them to acquire you as a customer, but also the owner gets the federal subsidy, not you if you're the person doing business with SolarCity. And since they own it, what's your long-term obligation to them? These panels on your home that are owned by them, not you, can they place a lien on your home, putting a cloud on your title, making it more difficult for you to sell your home as long as you're under contract to them? Well, Tori Richards has done a series on this at a website called watchdog.org. And SolarCity's explanation doesn't comport with the one that Tori Leeds has herself discovered when you look at the legality of this. SolarCity calls it a fixture filing, but there seems to be little difference between the two under the law. We've got Tori with us right now. Tori, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on. Education is always a powerful tool.
All right, explain what this is all about.
Okay, well, SolarCity is probably by now the largest solar contractor in America, and they do business in everywhere except probably Florida because Florida won't let them have their leasing model. But when you, as a customer, agree to what seems like such a great deal, like, hey, you know, all this free electricity, all I need to pay them is, you know, some small monthly rate to lease this system, you're right, they own it. But in doing so, SolarCity wants to make sure that they have their hands on it if something happens with your house. So they slap a lien on your house. And SolarCity is claiming it's not a lien. In fact, they say so in their contract. They say so on their website. In a Q&A format, they say, does the SolarCity home have a lien? And then they'll say, no. I mean, they flat out say it, but it is a lien, according to Wells Fargo, according to a title expert slash lawyer that I talked to. It is a lien, and there's no way to really separate out to the bank in their eyes, you know, these panels on the roof. It's the house, and it's the same thing, okay, if you had a soft water system or a water heater or anything else that somebody, it was their property, they would put a lien against the property. And then that's what Wells Fargo did, and I found a victim where this happened to him, and he was furious. He was under time crunch to get an equity line of credit on his house, and he couldn't do it because Wells Fargo said, hey, you have this lien here, so we're not going to give you this until you remove it.
SolarCity calls this a fixture filing. That's the term they use, but you checked with someone who's an expert in this area, Sal Balsamo, and His explanation is that by attaching a fixture filing, even if you want to call it that, to the property, SolarCity becomes second in line to collect proceeds behind the original mortgage lender in the event of a default. So any future lender, whether providing a refinance or equity loan, would not want to be third in line and would demand that SolarCity remove the lien. So it functions as a lien, whether they call it that or not, apparently.
Correct. And this isn't new or something SolarCity made up. Your listeners can Google it. It's UCC-1 fixture filing. And this is for the purposes of something that's attached to your house that somebody else wants to have a vested interest in if the house is sold. So that's what this is. But according to my expert, who's a lawyer and also has his own title business, and he's closed some, I think, 50,000 home loans, he says it's parsing words to a ridiculous degree. This fixture filing, it's another term for lease. That's what it is. And in the eyes of Wells Fargo, that's what it is, too. So I think Wells Fargo has a lot more experience in this area than SolarCity. I think liens has a negative connotation, so they don't want that associated with their contracts or their website. But I think your listeners and any customers who are out there, maybe who read my article, knowledge is power, like I said. People should not be hoodwinked. They should know exactly what they're getting when they sign on a dotted line. So that's the purpose of my articles.
So this fellow Jeff Leeds, who you talk about, telling his story, said that he was surprised when he discovered that, in essence, there was a lien on his property. He said he talked to the bank. They told me it was a lien. He had to pay the bank a $48 fee for removal of the lien. This held him up from closing on a loan to buy a vacation home, so he had to borrow from another account, cost him time and calls to Wells Fargo and to SolarCity. He was very annoyed.
Correct. Mr. Leeds, I mean, he was just angry. It's his, first of all, he lives in Northern California, and so it's not the end-all of sunshine. It's near San Francisco. But he was pressured into the system by a SolarCity salesperson and his wife. And so he told me, hey, I was just looking for any reason that this was a bad idea to have these panels, and I never would have signed on the dotted line. I would have told my wife, you know, never mind. And so if he would have known up front about this lien, he said he never would have had this system. But he has had numerous problems with SolarCity, and I profiled him in an article a year ago, and it's just been one horror after the other, and he just wishes he never did it.
We're going to take a break here. When we come back, Tori, I want to lead you down a related path with this. As a matter of fact, there was this, a piece I was just reading by Brian Potts, he's partner at an international law firm, in the Weekly Standard, about the whole nature of these solar subsidies and how what would otherwise, without the subsidy, be a terrible investment, a bad economic decision for a homeowner, turns out, ironically, to be a good one from an individual standpoint, although there's no free lunch. It's at somebody else's expense. I'll explain that when we come back on 850 KOA.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. American Financing offers the new government-backed down payment for first-time home buyers. Call American Financing at 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
We're talking to Tori Richards from Watchdog.org about your relationship with SolarCity if they're leasing you solar panels. You're not buying them now, keep in mind. The reason why this financial deal can look so attractive is you may be paying nothing down, you're paying a monthly amount, but you're just renting them. If you buy solar panels, you've actually bought them for your house, you can get a 30% federal tax credit back. The typical residential solar system costs about $20,000, which means an instant tax credit of about $6,000. That reduces your tax bill, penny for penny, $6,000. Big chunk of change, especially if you finance the solar system with no money down. However, if you're doing business with Solar City under this kind of lease arrangement, they own the panels. So you're not getting a tax credit. You're just paying some net amount. They are getting the tax credit, which is why they like to do it this way. Other companies do this as well. Solar City has received approximately $500 million in tax subsidies and grants over the years. But you have an obligation to them since you're using their equipment, a long-term obligation to honor your original deal on that those solar panels that you're renting, and that can affect your ability to sell the home. That's what we're talking to Tory Richards about. Now, let me give you a bigger picture. The Department of Energy. Now, you take this with a grain of salt, since this is Obama's Department of Energy, and they're trying to advance his sustainable energy agenda. They issued a study earlier this year. By investing in solar panels, most homeowners will save more in electric costs over the next 25 years, the approximate life of the system, than they would earn from investing the same money in the stock market over that same period of time. Now, that, of course, is based on some assumptions about what you'll earn in the stock market. The study also found that of the single-family households in the 50 largest American cities, 93% of them, or 21 million households, would pay less for solar power today than they currently pay to purchase power from their electric utility. But here's the fly in the ointment. Building and operating a large-scale solar power plant, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, which is cheaper to build and operate per unit of energy than a small-scale residential installation, costs twice as much as building and operating a conventional fossil fuel power plant. So how can it be that solar power costs at least twice as much as conventional, but is still a lot cheaper in the vast majority of cities? The answer is simple. Subsidies. And lots of them. Every time you pay your taxes or your electric bill, you're helping to pay for your neighbor's solar panels or wind turbines. In fact, while you might have chuckled at your hippie neighbors for installing those ugly solar panels on their roof last year, it turns out they're the ones laughing all the way to the bank because you helped pay for their new toy, and now they're making money off your investment. All because this is an artificial market environment created by government subsidies. What wouldn't be a cheaper source of energy for them is only cheaper because this is being redirected at others, including on your utility bill, even on your utility bill. The way the utilities handle fixed versus variable cost, you are subsidizing the people who are using these solar panels. Tori, I know you haven't gone there in your story, but can you shed any additional light on this?
Well, actually, you know what? You must be a mind reader because today I posted a story for the state of Florida. And the headline, the first paragraph I wrote is this: Florida communities and utilities will lose a minimum of $755 million a year, which will be charged to residents in higher rates and possibly taxes if a proposed solar expansion amendment is passed in 2006, the coalition says. So basically, you and I, or anybody else who just has regular electricity from the power company, there are taxes and fees that are tacked onto that. And that goes back to the city, the county, the state. They put it in their general fund or whatever they do with it. If you have solar, you do not pay those taxes or fees. But however, if your system isn't producing enough solar, you can use the grid that you and I use, but you don't have to pay taxes and fees on that. And so Florida wants to expand solar in that state because they don't allow this leasing model, and so it would in essence allow Solar City to come in there and do this leasing that we were talking about. And so the utility companies and some cities have their own power and act like the utility. They have studied this and they figured out that just at 10% increase in the state of everyone wanting solar, this translates into $755 million that is lost, which means there's no way to bill the solar company or the customers for that money. It would go to you and I that pay the electricity. So in essence, like, you'd be paying double, I guess, because your neighbor has solar.
the 30% federal tax credit I talked about is nice, but even that isn't sufficient to make solar cost competitive. What makes it competitive is that states and local governments have also heaped on more tax credits and incentives of their own. As a matter of fact, 23 states have solar tax credit programs. Many counties and cities also have their own incentive programs. Here in Colorado, the legislature has passed mandates on our major utility company, Xcel Energy, to increase the mix of solar and wind and other sustainable alternatives over time, project that out into the future. Again, increasing the cost on people who use conventional energy because of the subsidies that are granted to people who are using these alternative sources. If there weren't the subsidies, solar and wind, and unless you wanted to make the financial sacrifice of paying much more for your energy in order to save the planet or to make you feel good if you're a greenie, you could make that choice freely to do it. But under this artificial circumstance, you can make that choice, feel really good about yourself, because the rates that are imposed on your neighbors artificially are enabling you to enrich themselves at their expense.
Yeah, it's just really not fair. I mean, I haven't investigated SolarCity for a year now, ever since I wrote an article on customer horror stories. By the way, I got, I didn't make this up, I got all these complaints from the Better Business Bureau and Yelp, and anyone can go on and see them for themselves. But it's just really been an eye-opener. And so I get SolarCity emailing me and others saying, oh, you just hate solar, oh, you're just a right-winger. And it's like, no, it's none of those. I think solar is great, but A, it shouldn't put a greater burden on other taxpayers. You should pay for your solar and then use it if you like. And then B, it shouldn't be shoved down the throats of the rest of us that don't want to use it. It should just kind of be a free choice.
But it's politically correct, you see, solar and wind, and that trumps everything. It's like saying to farmers, we want you to replace your tractors with a horse-pulled plow, and the federal government will give you $50,000 a year to do that. It's bad economics, but it fits our energy agenda, so we're going to distort the market in order to give you the incentive to do this kind of thing. It'll kill your productivity, but somebody else is going to have to pay for it, and higher food prices or something else. All right, 713-8585, our telephone number. If you've had any experience with this, if you have some thoughts on one side of this or the other, Tory Richards is our guest. We'll take our bottom of the hour news break here, but we invite you to call and participate.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. American Financing offers the new government-backed down payment for first-time home buyers. Call American Financing at 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
Terry Richards, our guest of Watchdog.org. Let's go to the phones. Jerry in Denver, what's your comment or question? Hello, Jerry.
I had a question about the solar, and it is so you rent it from Solar City or any of the other companies.
Mm-hmm.
Now on your roof, you enjoy it, maybe and maybe not. You sell your house because you're moving out of state, you're downsizing, upsizing. The new owner does not want them. Would that company come back out and take $20,000 worth of equipment off the roof for free? Or maybe you can't sell your house now.
Well, that's a good question. I can't answer that. We just lost our connection to Terry, so we're going to call her right back. You might need to repeat the question. But you raise a very interesting point. And in addition to this, keep in mind, the life of these panels isn't perpetual.
Oh, no, it's 20 years, mate.
20 years, yeah. Generously 25. But after 15 years, those panels aren't worth what they were worth when they were first installed, because their useful life is a lot. Yes, and how about hail damage?
And
in
what
Colorado.
About roof damage? You have to take them all off to do your roof.
Yeah.
So my question is, if your roof goes, who take the Solar City come take the solar panels off so the roofing company can re-roof?
Okay, Tori, are you back?
Yes, I'm back.
Did you get the question?
Okay, so if someone wants to change out their roof, what happens?
No, he's saying, say after you've had the house for a bunch of years, you have a deal with Solar City, and now you want to sell the house and move on. What's your ongoing obligation to Solar City?
See, you have to, that lien slash agreement is on you. You have to pay that off. Or the buyer who comes along has to agree to absorb that lean, and they might not want to do that. I did a story about a month ago that's on our website with Arizona, and there was a state legislator there who had a couple in a retirement community, and they had been trying for a long time to sell their house. They had 100 people come through that house looking to buy it, and no one wanted solar panels on that roof, so they couldn't buy it. I mean, sell it. So in the end, the couple, and they wanted to move to a retirement community. They were older. They had to just buy out Solar City at whatever cost it was.
So the onus is on you, if you're selling the house, to find a buyer that wants to continue the obligation that you had with Solar City. Do I understand that correctly?
Yes, that's true. Or you have to pay it off yourself like this couple did, so that it could just get the lien off that title and they could sell the house. But anyway, so Arizona lawmakers didn't like this because it's just not – they just think that solar operators are not giving citizens the full story in these contracts.
Also, we have
some of them are misleading, and so now there are laws to protect customers now in Arizona. They're the first state to do this.
We have the terminology disagreement here as well. Solar City says, no, no, this isn't a lien. It's a fixture filing. And
oh, yeah. So now there's this new law saying you have to tell up front the cost of the system, including interest. You have to tell customers what detriment they may have to putting this on the roof if they want to sell this house. So then that would be included. They need to talk about what we just discussed. You have to have at least 10-point type in this contract. You can't have blank spaces. Just like common stuff that anybody would want in a contract. And the solar industry fought that vigorously. They didn't want any of these.
Well, the reason I got into the semantics, Solar City said, no, there's no lien on your house. It's a fixture filing. And you say, well, wait a second. Unless the buyer agrees to assume my obligation, I've got this cloud on my title. Yeah. Well, what's the difference between that and between a lien and a fixture filing? And the answer is there's no difference. It operates exactly the same way.
It does, but if you ask Solar City, they'll give you this mumbo jumbo, say no, it's not. It's it's not really a lien. If you work with us, we deal with thousands of homes, and we help people every day that need to remove these and put it back on. But then you have to pay to remove it. I think you have to pay to file it to put it back on. And it's just like Mr. Leeds had. It was a big surprise, and it held up his loan.
Jerry, anything else?
So you're saying that if I want to change my roof color, we'll say, in between the lease period, Solar City
does not. Well, if you want to get a new roof, I mean, that, I was going to explore that in another story, because they're not going to want to come out there and remove it and put it back on, so you're going to have to pay for all that.
The labor.
Yes. I mean, that could be extensive, and then you have to have the building inspector out there again from the city.
Right. And coach.
I mean, that is a huge investment. Yeah. So once it's on there, you better think it's there. And be sure that, you have a roof that you don't want to re-roof, or you don't want to be selling the house.
Or the roof will last longer than the solar panels because they have a limited lifetime.
Now, we should also note that you don't have to lease these panels from Solar City or another country, another company. You can actually buy them and get that tax credit directly. However, if you buy them, you're going to have to deal with the financing on that, and you might have to make a considerable down payment on it as opposed to what seems like an easier lease. However, there are difficulties, as we've discovered, about what happens to your obligation if you just have a lease arrangement. Okay, Jerry, thanks for your call.
Is it ever paid off?
Oh, it's a 20-year lease. That's what their business model is.
That's
so
the term of the
years.
Lease.
Yeah, so just think about it like a car. You're buying a new car, and so you're going to be paying a lot in interest over the life of it.
So there is an end of it, 20 years. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks for your call. Let's go to Kevin. Kevin, what's your story?
Hi, this is Kevin. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I got a wind turbine, and I actually, went through the town to get the rebates, and the state and the feds basically come out just about $1,000 short. But the company said it was going to do this and that and didn't do that, and end up the electrician ended up almost putting a lien on my property because the company went under. So I had to pay off the electrician. All in all, I went through just about a 2-year ordeal, and it was going to eventually turn out to be 9 cents a month that this turbine was going to pay back. And I had potential liens and everything else. So basically my point is I'm fiscal conservative. I should have went with my model, never have the taxpayers on the hook for anything that I want. Yeah. I did it just strictly out of getting, you know, a value out of it. And I had to do it before the town would say we could not do this anymore. There was 10 allotted, and I just rushed into it. Their stats were terrible about how much I was going to generate, and it was just a big bust.
So if you had it to do over again, you wouldn't have done it.
Exactly.
Okay, thanks for your call. Right back on 850 KOA.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. Military personnel streamline your VA refinance even if you're over 100% equity. No appraisal needed. Call 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
Tori Richards is our guest. 713-8585, our telephone number. Tori, I should mention the name of the website, watchdog.org, and we're talking about Solar City. Did we have another? Okay, all right, never mind. Excuse me.
You know what, there's an observation I wanted to make with the last caller. One of the things that Arizona did is it was a really comprehensive buyer beware type of law, but these solar companies will just tell you anything as far as what you pay in electricity. And so they were misleading customers saying, hey, you're going to be paying, like, I don't know, X amount in per kilowatt, and if with us, you know, it's down to practically nothing. And so these legislators found that they were lying, and in fact, the rates in Arizona are so low, it's like a couple cents or something, and it hasn't gone up in years. So it's kind of like the sales pitch that you get with a timeshare. Oh, my gosh, if you don't get our timeshare pretty soon, you'll be paying $1,000 a night for a hotel. And so then they try to do that. And so I think people out there just need to do their homework. They need to look on your electric bill that you have now and what do you pay per kilowatt, and then see what the system is that they're going to give you and what this lease is going to cost you.
All right. David Centennial is a realtor with comments on homes with solar. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
It's a real problem, even in the hot market that we have right now, that the minute you get an offer, you can put it on the market, you're going to get numerous offers and over the listing price. But when you have this environment of what you've just both been talking about, it's a real problem for the buyer because they're having to take on everything that you're talking about here. And a lot of these people have been sold a bill of goods like it's going to improve the value of their property, and not to worry about anybody not wanting to assume this, because by the way, you're gaining all this energy savings in that. So it's trying to find people willing to take on the whole idea of what you just mentioned. Things wear out. You have to replace them. You're still liable on the lease for 20 years. So it's a real nightmare for a lot of homeowners that got into this not aware of what they're getting into.
What happens if somebody agrees to take over the lease obligation of the person he's buying the home from? There's 2 years to go on the lease. At the end of those 2 years, are you now out of the lease if you're a new buyer? And can you tell Solar City to come out and take the panels away?
You know, the broker that I was talking with regard to it, I just said you could not. I said I wouldn't even touch this with a 10-foot pole without getting a real good contract attorney to examine all the small print in liability, because as a buyer's agent and a broker, you're assuming any advice you're giving is something they can bank on. And I'd tell my people to stay away from it, because you're assuming somebody else's liability. And a lot of these, some of these contracts, even if you assume the liability, this previous owner is still on the hook if you don't come through. So, I mean, it's just some of those, it's just a nightmare like you've been going through and you've been talking about. So
thanks for your call.
No problem.
Let's go to Dana in Denver. You're on 850 KOA. Hello, Dana. Dana,
hey,
what's on your mind?
Well, I'm trying to figure out why you guys are making it seem like Solar City is doing this onerous thing when, in fact, if you put a solar panel system on your roof and you pay for it in cash and you decide to re-roof, then you're going to have to remove it and replace it. And
if you pay for it in cash, then you own it. It's not a lease arrangement. It's a different situation.
So
well, Solar City gets the tax credit, not you, under the leasing arrangement.
Now, let's just stick to the one point. You're going to re-roof your house,
yeah,
and you have a solar panel system on it, then you're going to pull that system off and you're going to put it back, and that's going to be mandatory that you do that.
Yeah, but well, Dana, here's the point. We're talking about a lease agreement here. Under what you're describing, it's not a lease agreement with another company.
Yeah, but the impact is no different.
Of course it's different. Of course it's different. It's not a lease arrangement.
I have to pay a guy to pull it off, and I have to pay a guy to put it back.
You know, I understand that, but there are so many other things that make it different. It's obviously different if you own something as compared to leasing it from somebody else.
Yeah, in this case,
here's what I'm saying. You're saying it's no different, and I'm saying it is different, and I just explained why.
Okay, well, I had quotes last year from Solar City and from Dow for the shingles and also from Namaste. And I didn't pick Solar City,
yeah.
But the fact is that what Solar City tells you they will do is that for no money down or for a small amount down or a slightly larger amount down, they will lease you this system.
Yeah.
What they're really doing is they're providing you with electricity.
Well, no, but it's much more complicated than that. All right. We're not going to go anywhere in the next 20 seconds with that anyway. Tori, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it. I think you've enlightened some people with this.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. All right. We've got Colorado's Afternoon News coming up next. And draft day coverage today starting at 3, tomorrow, and then Saturday as well.